691.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a wonderful show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we'll be doing an interview with Mr. Alexander Shmuel Finman, my son, who just came back from a stint in Southeast Asia. He's going to tell us what Judaism is like in that corner of the world. Fascinating, some very funny stories too. It is the portion of Bo, which is continuing with the Exodus. We get the Exodus of Egypt in this story, the Passover story, the Haggadah. A lot of the Haggadah comes from this week's portion of the week. We've got a ton of music, very interesting. You're going to like this Hasidic story that we're ending with. So stay tuned for the end of the show. But before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Israeli security forces arrested five young Palestinians for multiple terrorist attacks, including an attack on a female driver that left her in critical condition. The teenagers arrested threw rocks at cars from moving vehicles and shot at Israeli motorists. A car exploded Thursday afternoon near the Defense Ministry headquarters in Tel Aviv. Nine people were injured in what police said was an attempt on the life of crime boss Nissim Alperon. It was the eighth attempt on his life. All those hurt in the bombing sustained light injuries and were treated at a nearby hospital. Two bicyclists were later arrested and charged with attempted murder by placing the bomb underneath Alperon's Mazda. What does that say about a country when the mob boss is driving a Mazda? Anyway, the big news in Israel, everything else came to a screeching halt. Heavy rains and thunderstorms hit northern and central Israel this week. The rain shut down most commuter train lines. Major roads were closed in Herzliya, Rehovot, and Bat Yam. In both Herzliya and Bat Yam, firefighters and police had to rescue drivers who were trapped in rising floodwaters on roads. You should see the pictures. What their equivalent of 696 looks like, our equivalent of the Detroit River. Thankfully, there have been no injuries. There are actually a couple of people killed during car crashes and people getting stuck. But listen to this. The Kinneret rose 27 inches this past week and is now standing at a 20-year high. And finally, two pro-Israel bills were introduced in the new Congress. The Jerusalem bill removes the possibility of a presidential waiver every 6 months to prevent moving the embassy as a matter of national security. The embassy was to be moved in Jerusalem in 1995, but the ensuing presidents have, every 6 months, have exercised the right of saying, we're not going to do it for another 6 months. That bill also endorses every citizen of Israel to have the right to reside anywhere in the undivided capital of Israel, of Jerusalem. In a second bill, Representatives Brad Sherman, who's a Democrat of California, and Ted Poe, who's a Republican of Texas, introduced a bill that would add Israel to the 37 countries whose citizens are allowed to enter the United States for up to 90 days without a prearranged visa. Now, let me just say it again. These are introductions of bills. Congress introduces thousands of bills every year. And, you know how many things get done in Congress. I'll tell you a cute joke about that later. Bye. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Do you know the best place to buy fruit and vegetables? Why, it's at Fruitasia. Located on Southfield Road, just south of the 13 Mile, Fruitasia provides quality, value, and the most wonderful environment to shop. You'll enjoy the spacious aisles, excellent selection, great prices, and friendly staff at Fruitasia on Southfield Road and 13 Mile.
Hey, Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. A reminder that Fruitasia, on 13 Mile in Southfield, now has kosher meat. I'll tell you a quick story before I introduce my guest. I was cruising around the web looking for some stuff for the material for the show, and I came across an ancient Jackie Mason bit that he did at Caesar's Palace in 1964. He comes out and he says, you know, this is a wonderful country. Look at the members of Congress. You know, it doesn't say anywhere in the Constitution that a congressman has to go to college. You don't have to go to college to get into Congress. Now, but you look at the NFL. To get into the NFL, you got to go to college. That's why in this country we have such wonderful football players and such horrible congressmen. That was 1994. Okay, our guest today on the Jewish Hour is Alexander Finman, who has just recently come back from a tour of duty, you might say, in Southeast Asia. How are you today, Mr. Finman?
Good morning, Rabbi Finman. Thank you for having me on your show. I'm fine, Baruch Hashem.
That's good to hear. Before we get into like Southeast Asia, tell us about this phenomena. You're 20 years old. How is it that you found yourself? What's this whole program that you found yourself in Vietnam, Cambodia, and places such as?
Well, I always said, join Chabad and see the world. What happens is that a yeshiva bacher, when they're gearing towards to be a rabbi, even though they have to go to yeshiva, and sometimes they have to go to smicha, but they also have to learn how to build up social skills and how to actually get in the field, get their hands dirty. And so what many yeshivas require is that you take 1 year off and go to the other yeshivas teaching with Bacharim, and sometimes they even might send you to another Chabad house in the States or in Israel. For me, it wasn't really appealing for me to go and around to some yeshiva, so I decided
too
to
mundane, eh? Yes.
Yeah, I figured if I'm going to be dealing with yeshiva Bacharim my whole life, I'll be dealing with Balabatim. So
Balabatim means just normal people. Excuse me, Alex. Just speak English, please. That's all. Go ahead.
I'm not used to speaking English anyway.
Okay, I understand. Go ahead.
Okay. And so what we do is I did some legwork, I did my own digging, and I found out that a friend of a friend that he has a position open, available in Hawaii or in Vietnam. And I picked Vietnam. That's kind of what puts me there.
Uh-huh. And what was expected of you in Vietnam? You didn't go by yourself. You went with somebody else, correct?
Yeah, it's true. I had a chavrusa, which is a partner, so that you wouldn't be bored out on yourself. We always had to make sure to hold down the fort for the entire day. What happened is that we'd have a traveler come in during the week, which was part of it, as we had to be a welcome center as Jewish presence in the Far East, because when people go to the Far East, they go on vacation, they go to get away from things, and we're trying to sort of set a balance, equilibrium, as well as we have to do Shabbos there, as well as a very big deal, especially for the Israelis. They all come for Friday night, and we have to make them feel comfortable, and then you have to give a speech or prepare and run the show if the rabbi is not there.
Okay,
got it. As well as provide kosher food.
Okay, we're not running a travelogue, but tell us about Jewish Vietnam. Is there a Jewish community? Are there Jews who live in Vietnam that require, say, like a synagogue and the services of a rabbi, Alexander Finman?
No, it's funny that you bring that up, because you wouldn't think that there's any Jews that actually live so remotely in the Far East. But actually, there are about 150 Jews that I saw that actually live in the Far East, businessmen or entrepreneurs, etc. And I'll tell you how I did find this out was when we had, for instance, Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, so they all show up. And so you can take down the information and target them that way.
Uh-huh. So there are people there. There are people living there. It's not just the trekkers, the backpackers that are like finished their mandatory IDF services that are just looking for adventure and to get away from the world. But there are people that are living there and doing what people do all over the world and living their lives there then.
Well, yes, but more in the Vietnam, because since it has been, it's a budding country for already 10 years. And 6 years ago, there were dirt roads in the main city. And now you have such a thing as motorized vehicles, not just bicycles to get around on. But people that came early, they're able to establish. There's actually a man there that I know very well, that he started up to investing in fish, because Vietnam is very big in fish, and he started many years ago, and now he's very successful. So uh-huh. There is room to grow there.
Sounds kind of fishy to me there, Alex. yes, you can't get away from your dad. Anyway, So Vietnam specifically is a communist country. They practice a Chinese version of like Maoist communism per se, and as is, doesn't recognize religion per se. Communism is officially atheist. So how was it for this Jewish organization to function in an atheistic country?
I have to tell you, it starts off very crazy. And when Chabad, since we arrived on the scene, and, you know, Vietnam wasn't much of anything, even 7 years ago, it was a bit crazy back then because you had all these ministries you had to go to. And since it is a communist country and there's much corruption involved, as we all know from looking at the USSR, so you do have to know how and when to sort of grease the wheels a little bit. But in Vietnam itself, I don't believe that, in China, I don't think so, that they've viewed Judaism as a religion. I do know that there was a Vietnamese a couple, it's a funny story, but what happened was that since they converted, the rabbi suggested that they move to a Jewish community in Hong Kong.
They have to move to the big city where there's like a lot of Jews, like Hong Kong.
There's a lot of Jews.
Yeah, like 500 instead of 200.
We can facilitate for Jewish community. We have we just built a garden for there if you have children. There's a shul. It's very nice. There's a restaurant. You get kosher food. We import food, and we do export, and et cetera. There is room if someone, you know, obviously, the Chabad House does facilitate towards Jewish community for the locals as well.
Mm-hmm. You brought up the idea of kosher food. Now, I can go into, say, a kosher market. I have the choice of several markets that have huge kosher sections, or in America, I don't even have to have a kosher section. I can walk down any section, and there are probably 350,000 kosher products on the shelves. What's keeping kosher in Vietnam like? Is it primitive? Is it developed? Is it in between?
That is a very difficult question to answer because there are many products out here in America that you can trust, like, oh, it's just Coca-Cola, it's got to be kosher. There are certain things out there, for instance, Fanta is not kosher, and in the States it is. There's many different products that you would assume that are kosher that are not the same thing. There are some products that, for people that are well-versed in this field, that they can know, oh, that doesn't mean a hechsher, I can just eat that. But because it's in the Far East, you can have many products that are just made weird, like they just add something in there for the sake of making it Vietnamese-esque, and you don't know that. For instance, they might put some weird fish fat because they like fish back there in the food, and then that's it, and then you don't know. So eating out is definitely a big no-no, even in many of the vegetable-only for the religious non-Jews out there that only eat vegetables. Even there, you still can't eat out. So to keep Jewish kosher, we do have to... We do get our own milk from the farms, and we pasteurize it for meat. It's a different story because we can't. They have a lot of rules about how to slaughter animals there, in which districts, and the districts that we tried to do slaughter animals in there, the water isn't sanitary enough. So it's like a catch-22. I always say we just had to bribe the right people, and we would have gotten kosher meat in Vietnam. We have to smuggle it in, and it is a bit crazy, but we do have an extensive restaurant, and I think that... even with the vegetables that aren't so because of Agent Orange, but still there is availability to just go to the store and get vegetables, to get fruit, to get fish. And in that sense, because it's such a third world country, it is possible to find food even when you're traveling.
Uh-huh. You mentioned it's an interesting point. I didn't think we were going to get into sociodemographics over here, but Agent Orange, is that something that's on the forefront of people's minds that they have to worry about what kind of vegetables they're buying in Vietnam?
In a way, yes, and in a way, no, because Agent Orange was many, many years ago. Nowadays, everyone uses chemicals to keep the fruit to grow larger or to make the fruit clean, with no bugs, chemicals, pesticides. So they don't know, most of the farmers do not know how to use the pesticides. They just kind of lab it on there and hope it works. So even without Agent Orange, you still have to wash. I always wash everything I eat several times, even with the water that is supplied. In the District 1 where I am, the water usually is clean enough to drink, but nevertheless, I do have to wash all that pesticides off. Now, in regards with Agent Orange, is that it's still, there's a large presence of it because it affects one person that was eating it many years ago, and then you have children that grew up eating Agent Orange fruits and vegetables to 25, 30 people, 30 years old, and it's still, it destroyed half of at least half of Vietnam is just wasteland now, and you have people walking around, coworkers, you know, you can see on their faces that something's wrong, something's going on, and if you go to the sweatshops, businessmen take advantage of Agent Orange as a disabled person, and I'm going to teach you job skills, and therefore they get benefits from the government. So if you go out to the moondock, so to speak, you can definitely see disfigured people, people with disabilities, et cetera, et cetera. And it's quite disheartening to see.
Okay. That's really sorry to see. Okay, back to Judaism. Okay, you were there for Rosh Hashanah, for Yom Kippur, for Sukkot. What's holiday celebration like there?
Oh, it's amazing. The Israelis, they love to come for the holidays. I've been preparing for it. We could have gotten a little bit like crazy, but Rosh Hashanah, we have it on the main floor. We set up the whole place, and we had a large crowd. It was very nice. I do recall Yom Kippur though. Was that a lot of people did show up, but since we had to run the show, it was a very heartwarming Yom Kippur, I must say. Even in the Far East, I don't believe I never had such an ability to realize that, well, there's Judaism here. It strikes you a lot more than when you're at home in your four walls, in your community. I really felt like I was accepting the mirror much more, and obviously everyone around me was the same in that sense.
Okay. Most of the community you're saying is transient. Are you able to maintain connections with them and as they're traveling along, or maybe pass their name on to, you ask somebody, where are you going? Well, I'm going to Thailand. So you pass your name on to the Chabad rabbi in Thailand to keep a lookout for the guy, anything like that? Follow up is the question.
Well, it's a bit difficult because people decide to go to this place or that hole in the wall or this little hamlet or that town. So we tried to tell them, oh, you know, there is a Beit Chabad there. You know, I can go online. But in regards to Cambodia, however, since it's right next door, many people that go to Vietnam go to Cambodia afterwards and vice versa. So we actually do carry the business cards of either or. So they have a way to go to a know-how. So to speak the languages out in foreign countries is very difficult. So when you have a piece of paper that says the address in the local language, it is much easier. But many of the resources are online, and you have all these travel websites. Let's say if you're an Israeli and you just finished the military, you can go on these blogs. And yes, Chabad is mentioned throughout.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I was traveling from Australia to America 26 years ago, and the plane stopped off in Fiji. And we had a three-hour stopover in Fiji. And I went in the bathroom and scrawled on the bathroom wall in Hebrew, with the words Chabad of Melbourne, with a telephone number. So people they join Chabad to see the world. But when they go to see the world, they see Chabad, they go to see the world, they join Chabad. So you also spent some time in Cambodia. Let's do some little comparing and contrasting, because usually people think in the same sentence: Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos. All like in, as they go, kind of like lump, we here in America just kind of lump it all together. It's all sort of like over there, kind of like what people in New York City do with everything west of the Hudson. Yeah, so let's do some comparison. What's Cambodia different, and what's it similar to Vietnam?
Well, in Vietnam, it's all about being polite and different ways of going about things. Like most Asian countries, they have a lot more technology. It's more of it's easier for people to get mopeds. However, in Cambodia, there's a lot of roads that are not paved, and so you have all these affluent landlords, et cetera, that they drive these high-powered twin-turbo cars. It's like a normal thing to see traffic jams just recently. I think maybe 2 years ago, the main street was out of dirt. And, you know, Cambodia is much more of a third-world country. The water, it burns. I get acid burns when I would, for instance, take a shower, wash my hands from the water. But the people there are so happy in their state. They're like, you know, we always say, Hasameh Bechalka, like, who is a happy person, a wise person, who is happy with his lot? And you can really feel that from them. Many Israelis, they go on to touring and they see Vietnam, and it's like, oh, okay, just another New York. And they go to Cambodia and the different hamlets and resort towns of Cambodia, they really feel like, you know, the army may have been difficult, my life at home may have been difficult, you may have not been the richest person on the block. But these people, they really stick it out, and they leave changed people.
Mm-hmm. You spent your time in Cambodia, so you left a changed person then, I guess.
Yes, obviously, especially because I was interacting with people that were going through this finding themselves stage. And I was obviously, since they're sort of in the wavering, their minds are wavering, they're sort of all abuzz. So it's a very good time to sort of insert some interest in Judaism as well, because when people go around to the Far East, they're not exposed to that much Judaism unless they go to a Chabad house. So So there's two parts to being a Chabad of Chabad in Vietnam, Cambodia, and the Far East at large. Well, you have to be welcomed and properly make them feel at home, which most people do. In fact, all Chabads are very good at that. But then there's also many Israelis, tourists, etc., that do not go to Chabad because either they don't know of it, they don't know where it is, or they're just want to sit down, relax, and grab a beer. So I would actually go out and find these people and sit down and learn with them, and we would just have conversations, intellectual conversations, because for many Israelis to have an intellectual conversation, it's like they haven't had that in years. They need someone that speaks their language. It's like a warming sight. It's a warming feeling for them.
Interesting. You got any unusual stories that happened, something that you might want to share with the Jewish Hour listening audience?
There are many stories. I do know that when, for instance, in Vietnam, they just had a big tete dum. They just made a woman's mikvah, which was a big deal, and they had a whole Hanukkah thing for that. But one of the interesting things that caught my eye, even though I wasn't participating in the event, I was busy trying to run it, when we all sat down to eat, and it was sort of like time to relax, like the dinner, the gala banquet, I looked around the room, and I saw that Chabad is Chabad. So we obviously had our affluent donors and sponsors, things like that. But we also had them side by side with people that just came off the bus, that just had to walk a few miles to find the place. And it was a beautiful thing to see in like such a beautiful hall that you have these everyone getting along. It was very nice. As opposed to...
Well, that's a good thing. So we start on good things. We talk about the positive. That's a very positive thing, yes. Your experience showed you the humanity of people, then, is what you're saying.
Yes, and you don't see that at all with us, the Cambodians themselves. They might be a great person, a great people, but they sort of, many tourists, they come to the Far East, they always get this feeling that they're viewed as just a walking wallet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's when they see someone else, be he an affluent businessman or a tourist or a Jew or... you know, not religious, they all seem to get this equal line. And out of all the crazy things that happen, all the crazy stories, find this equality among everyone, this sort of achdus, we say in Hebrew. It honestly was one of the best things I can say compared to any story with any event.
Indeed, indeed. And I was just impressed that you were on a bus from Cambodia to Ho Chi Minh City, also known as Saigon.
Yes, that was an interesting story. As I was finishing with Cambodia, I was sort of had to rush out to arrive here for the next plan of my life. And as I sat down on the bus, and we had a break or something, so we all got off the bus. And I was just spacing out the window, and I see a person walking out, you know, barefoot. So I said some stupid off remark, something funny, like I said, like a one-liner. And as I was saying this, I was looking at his feet, and I looked up to his face, and I'm like, yeah, he's Jewish, right away. And so for 8 hours, we were sitting and talking, and he was a Jew that he grew up in the Far East, and his family was Jewish, and he was Jewish, and he knew he was Jewish, but the only thing he knew about Judaism was the sign of a Magen David, and he just was trying to inform me about all the great things about India and the Far East, but at the same time, even though I was being a great listener, I was also trying to implant this feeling of you're a Jew, you're special, and you have power that any person out here with all their great nice things that they do, with let's say they feed the poor or the very humble, or they sit in a tree and pray all day to whatever. With this Jew, I honestly left an impression that Jews are something more or something special, and with us, it's not just that we can change the world if we want to and be a quote-unquote holy Hindu person. With us, it's more of an obligation. You know, we say we are chosen from all the other nations, and you have to believe that God is one, and that God was not with any other helper in creating the world. No Mother Nature was involved.
That's terrific. Yeah. Now, so you're back in Detroit, and Detroit compared to Ho Chi Minh City sounds really mundane. Would you go back to another third world country if you were asked, Alexander Finman?
Funny that you say that. I was actually sitting here this morning davening. When I finished davening, a young man came over to me, and so we were talking about where I was for the past, and he's like, well, you know what? You can always go to New Zealand. I hear they get like 1,000 people every week, and it's an amazing experience. And meanwhile, I just come, you know, after third world country, I'm still trying to just, fully developed country, and I'm already setting up learning things to do here. I'm always trying to move forward, but at the same time, in a heartbeat, I still feel this a pleasure, a calling to going out to these places in the middle of nowhere and finding these people, wherever they may be, in the woodwork, and shake them and say, listen, you're Jewish, you got what it takes. And yes, I would definitely do that in a heartbeat.
That's awesome. Okay, our guest has been my son, Alexander Finman, who's just come back from a bit of a stint in Vietnam and Cambodia, the Far East, the Southeast Asia. Thank you so much for coming on, and we wish you continued success, Alexander.
Thank you very much, Robert. Thank you for having me on your show.
Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Chiropractic healthcare offers patients the advantage of a safe and natural method of healing without the use of drugs or surgery. People of all ages, including children, benefit from chiropractic's unique approach to health. Call area code 248-557-1818 today to find out how chiropractic can benefit your family. At the Solomon Chiropractic Center, we especially love children. All kids should have their spines checked periodically throughout their crucial growing years. Growth on a crooked foundation will create a crooked spine and become harder to correct later in life. Kids love to get adjusted at the Solomon Chiropractic Center. And hey, moms, did you know that chiropractic offers a safe, drug-free approach to helping with the many pains women often get during and after pregnancy? We even have special tables which open up so pregnant women can lay on their stomachs. We treat moms, dads, children, and grandparents with arthritic pains, neck pains, back pain, and headaches. People of all ages, including kids, benefit from chiropractic. Come experience the natural method of healing without the use of drugs or surgery. Stop living in pain. Call area code 248-557-1818 today for a free consultation at the Solomon Chiropractic Center to discuss you and your family's health needs. Remember, 557-1818. That's 557-HI-HI.
Hey, Schultzman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. I thought it was really cool. I just thought it was really cool that my son was in Vietnam. I tell people, where's your son this year? Oh, he's in Vietnam. And people go, Vietnam? I was listening to a program. It was like late at night. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. I was driving around and coming back from something. I had the radio on to keep me awake. And a PSA came on that said, if someone asked you, when were you in Vietnam? And you say, last night, call us. And I'm thinking, wow, my son could do that, So it was, for people suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome. But yeah, my son could do that. That's really cool. Okay, we've got some musical for you. We had a request last week, but did not have time for it. And I remember the name of the song, but I don't remember who requested it. So I apologize to you who requested it, whose name shall not be mentioned here on the show. But they requested Shlomi Dachs singing Ka'il Tarog, which is a verse from Psalms, which says that just as a heart traverses the cliffs, so my soul longs for you. Let's listen to Shlomi Dachs.
Yeah.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We've, this one is, the night we have coming up, is called Freeways and the Beggar Woman. This is by the Magama Duo, featuring Schollenberg Levine, or Levine as he called himself. He was the viola player. I think he was the viola. I don't think it was a violin. He passed away last week, and a young man who was in his 60s. They were a group that gave us some pretty wonderful songs and some pretty crazy stuff. So, in memory of Schollenberg Levine, this is Magama doing The Freeway and the Beggar Woman.
Everybody's on the freeway. Everybody's in their car. Some folks travel the city. Here's some folks travel far. Everybody has his mountain. Look at the way we climb. Some of us going for the glory. Here's some of us go for the dime. He don't take Bank AmeriCard. He don't take Master Charge. And he doesn't care if you're lean and hungry or if you're fat and large. And he don't want your excuses. And he doesn't want your fraud. 'Cause the bottom line of this whole life is, what did you do for God? Everybody's on the freeway. Everybody's in their car. You run out of gas and the joker asks, where is the nearest bar? Everybody's on the freeway. We're all going to his town. Everybody hoping for a thumbs up on a whole life spent thumbs down. He don't take Bank AmeriCard. He don't take Master Charge. And he doesn't care if you're lean and hungry or if you're fat and large. And he don't want your excuses. And he doesn't want your fraud. 'Cause the bottom line of this whole life is, what did you do for God? Everybody's on the freeway. Everybody's in their car. Some folks travel the city. Here's some folks travel far. Some folks travel the city. Here's some folks travel far.
Thank you. You know, when you come in on the freeway.
Oh, that's great. When you, what's taking the line from the last song and using it for the introduction to this movie.
He's getting even. When you come in on the freeway from Tel Aviv into Jerusalem.
If you make a left turn.
And then if you make a right turn.
You come to Malchei Yisrael Street.
And when you go down that street.
You come to a part of town called Geula. And that's where our yeshiva, Yeshiva Devar Yerushalayim, is located. And not too far from the yeshiva, as a matter of fact, right there in front of the vegetable store there, there's an old lady who sits out on the street. We wrote this next song about her. Today she was sitting on the street, sorrow in her eyes, a tin can at her feet, holes in her stockings and holes in her shoes. She's that old beggar woman, no stranger to bad news. I reached in my pocket to give a bill or two. In my heart I was trying to think what I could do. She thanked me for the money, I turned to walk away. But I waited for a moment as she began to say, God loves the widow and the orphan and the blind, the old and the needy who haven't got a dime. God loves the sickly, and his eyes were all the same. And God will love you too, you just call upon his name. I don't know where she came from, I don't know her at all. The wrinkles on her face, they kinda tell it all. So reach in your pocket and give a bill or two, and you can thank God in heaven that the beggar isn't you. God loves the widow and the orphan and the blind, the old and the needy who haven't got a dime. God loves the sickly, and his eyes were all the same. And God will love you too, you just call upon his name. And God will love you too, you just call upon his name.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Hey, Rachel Feynman, hey, you're listening to The Jewish Hour. We got time for one more song. This is Shirley Willinger singing a song called Al Temuna Secha, Because of the Faith in You.
Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim.
Do you know the best place to buy fruit and vegetables? Why, it's at Fruitasia. Located on Southfield Road, just south of the 13 Mile, Fruitasia provides quality, value, and the most wonderful environment to shop. You'll enjoy the spacious aisles, excellent selection, great prices, and friendly staff at Fruitasia on Southfield Road and 13 Mile.
Hey, Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. I've got a couple of PSAs. Tonight at the Maple Theater, that I believe is on Maple Road and Telegraph, if I'm not mistaken, is a lecture entitled The Great Challenge, Judaism's Obligation to the World. Lecture discussion with Rabbi Dr. Nathan Lopez Cardoza. We had him on the show a couple of years back. As the world finds itself at a moral and spiritual crossroad, Judaism must unlock its resources, dare to make radical suggestions for mankind to implement to make the world a better place. That's at 7 p.m. again at the Maple Theater with a light dessert reception. There is no charge. And that's sponsored by an organization called Walking Home. And then, coming up on Sunday, January 27th at 2:30 p.m., International Holocaust Remembrance Day is going to be commemorated at the Holocaust Memorial. That's on Orchard Lake Road in Farmington Hills. After a short memorial service, Fred Feindling will give a special survivor presentation detailing his escape without documents out of Germany to relatives in Belgium, a succession of orphanages, a French castle, and finally, through the efforts of Eleanor Roosevelt and the Society of Friends, to the United States. There is complimentary museum admission on the 27th, and they're accepting donations. And again, that's Holocaust Memorial Day right here in Detroit. Your organization have an event that you'd like to have announced free of charge here on the Jewish Hour? No problem. Go to RabbiFinman.com. Hit the contact page, send me the details, and we'll be glad to do it. Portion of the week is the portion of Bo. As far as names of portion go, it's the shortest portion. It's chapter 10 and following in the book of Exodus. In it is the first mitzvah. The first mitzvah is the sanctification of the new moon. It was a special sacrifice which was brought in the temple. We really don't do anything to do it. Yesterday was the sanctification of the new moon. It was called Rosh Chodesh. We say some extra prayers. Women take the day off from household chores. But some people have like something extra fancy to eat in the middle of the day for a meal or whatever. But for all intents and purposes, it's really not celebrated at all. But so it's still counted as the first mitzvah enumerated in the Bible. And we have to say, if the first mitzvah enumerated in the Bible should be something like, Shema Yisrael, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, or believe in God, or something really magnanimous, give charity. Here it is, sanctify the moon, which we don't even do today. Why was this commandment picked by God to be the first one mentioned? It's an interesting thing. There are many commandments which are time-oriented, like the holidays, for example. It is a mitzvah. It is a commandment to eat matzah the first night of Passover. If you sit down right now, you're at your brunch table, and you decide, hey, I feel like munching on some matzah. You take out the matzah, and you put maybe a schmear on it, a little jelly, something, whatever it is, and you eat it. Is it a mitzvah? No. Sorry. No. If you do the same thing the first night of Passover, exactly the same act, I don't know with the jelly or not, but it now becomes a mitzvah and a vehicle for conveying godliness in the world because it's a mitzvah which is limited by time. And there's tons of these such mitzvahs. If you noticed there, the world happens to be limited by time and place. A famous line that the past, present, and future walked into a bar. And it was really tense. But the whole concept of time, believe it or not, is it's a created entity. What this commandment says is that time is not just a mundane entity. We look at the world around us. The world is filled with what we refer to as mundane things. What's mundane mean? Mundane as opposed to, say, profane, meaning prohibited, or holy. The vast majority of stuff in our world, fits into that middle category. Time, which is, as you could think about it, time is much bigger than place. Time came before place because at some point place started and then there was before that. So the time before that existed before there was place. So time is even greater than place. You know what? When place stops existing, so then time will continue because it'll be after that. Won't be very much long because time and place are really, really interdependent one on the other. But time is a greater thing. It says about time that God can easily forgive a person for committing idolatry, for committing adultery, for committing murder. These are the three big ones in Judaism that a person is never allowed to transgress. The Almighty can forgive such a person, but has difficulty forgiving a person that wastes time. And you think about it, no one puts into the calendar, let's see, Sunday from 12 to 1, right after the show, I'm going to waste an hour of time. Wasting time is like post facto. What did I do today? Oh, look at that, I wasted time. It just kind of sort of happens. But there's no way to make it up. You can't pay any money. You can't say, you know what, tomorrow I'm going to work twice as hard, because you could have worked twice as hard today and worked twice as hard tomorrow also. And so God says, I really have a problem with time wasters. The expression is God doesn't like lazy people. We, in the course of our lives, have to sanctify time. And that's why the sanctification of the new moon, which is a sanctification of time, is indeed the first commandment mentioned in the Bible. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in a growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? RabbiFinman.com. That's the way you do it. You go to the homepage. Right there it says contact Rabbi Finman. You contact Rabbi Finman. And bada bing, bada boom. Everything is great. There's also archived editions of the show, editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, and the Hasidic U-Story, which are various media of yours truly conveying information in an educational and entertaining way. And there's a very important donations page, which I mention every single week. And I'm not sure if I heard from you yet. So take in consideration. Go to the RabbiFinman.com and click on the donations page. Pick a number. It's all safe and secure. Nothing to worry about. I don't do it. It's PayPal. They know what they're doing. Don't like using internet for conveying of funds. I understand. Send your donation to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. This story happened in the 1760s. A woman, on the day of her wedding, came into the room of a certain Rev, Menachem Mendel Rimanov, who's known as the Rimanov Rebbe, and she was in tears. Her husband had been snatched by the Tsar's forces for conscription for 25 years in the Tsarist army. Now, normally this meant that you just didn't see the guy again for 25 years. But this is a bride, and she's like left with that. So he said, I will take care of this. And he ran immediately to where this outpost was of soldiers. And normally for a Jew to get in, it was just like nobody seemed to notice. He walked right past the guards, and he walked right into the commanding officer's office. And he stormed in, and this guy said, Jew, what are you doing here? How did you get in? He said, I want so-and-so to be released. And he said, nah, we don't do that. He'll be here for 25 years. He said, I demand so-and-so be released. I said, oh, he means that much to you. He says, listen, I need 5,000 rubles by this afternoon. If you can do that, I'll give him back. 5,000 rubles is enough for an entire village to live on for a year. He said, I will have the money for you then. So he ran off to his buddy, Levi Yitzhak Bardichev, and together they said, we're going to get 5,000 rubles by this afternoon. So they went to the Alter Rebbe, who at that time was a very young man, and he said, I know what to do, but you have to make me in charge. Let me be the lead on this one. So they said, okay, you know, it's not a Hasidic thing to say they want to take charge, but they said, okay, so he says, fine, let's draw up a list of all the people in town. So they drew up a list of all the people in town, how much they thought they could get from them. And it came out to like 27 rubles, you know. So he said, you left somebody off. I said, who? He says, I forget the guy's name in the story, but we'll call him Joe. Okay, he left off Joe's name, Yosef's name. He said, he's a miser. He doesn't give anything. I'm in charge. We're going to him first. He says, okay, we're wasting our time. They knocked on the door. Joe is actually quite wealthy. And he came and he told him the plight of this young man. And his Joe was in tears. And he said, yes, of course I'm going to help. And he went to his safe and he took out a rusty penny and handed the guys the rusty penny. The other two rabbis were incensed. And like the Alter Rebbe picked up his hand and said, thank you very much, Joe. We'll be on our way. And he took him and he walked out. At this point, Joe came back and said, wait. I've had a change of heart. He went into his safe, and he came back now, and he grabbed a whole handful of pennies. Yeah, that's going to help. He said, thank you very much. And this scenario went on 10 times. Each time, he was crying, and he was giving more and more and more. By the 10th time, he took out a wallet and gave them 5,000 rubles. And then he explained, 30 years ago, a beggar came to me when I was down and out and said, I don't have any money, and all I had to my name was a penny. But I gave that man that penny. And he looked at it and said, that's all you got is a penny, and he threw it back at me in disgust. And it was then that I vowed that I'm not going to give any more charity until someone accepts this penny. And he said, now I feel really sorry for all the charity that I didn't give till now. That's the show. I want to thank you for tuning in. We hope you had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.
Touching hearts, holding hands, sing a song heard by all the nations of Israel forever. Oh, Nishama,
every day on the Janet Mefford Show, we take a look at the news of the day, both in the church and in the world, from a distinctly Christ-centered perspective. We talk to the day's biggest newsmakers.